In my head, I saw that playing out very differently.
Maybe we should have stayed and tried harder to convince him to join us.
Or we could have thrown him into a potato sack and forced him into the ship.
That's how they got me to join the United Forces.
No, we can't coerce people. Or throw them in potato sacks. They must come freely. But not to worry. There are plenty of other airbenders out there who will be happy to come with us once they find out what the Air Nation's all about. When your son becomes a master, he'll get tattoos all over his body, just like me. There's nothing more nutritious than our vegetarian diet. I can tell that you're going to love wearing our ancient airbender robes. They're very breathable. You'll never have to worry about your worldly possessions again, because you won't have any. You'll get to shave your head. Your best friend will be a giant bison. Ugh. I really thought I had that last guy. Who doesn't want a bison as their best friend?
Welcome back to the Bitter Durers podcast. We are a queer Legend of Korra superfan podcast. As always, I am one of your hosts, Derek Grining, and I'm joined by someone who is only here because I threw him into a potato sack and forced him to be on a podcast with me. It's Sam Stanish.
Happy to be traveling around the country, picking up a ragtag group of queers who have unleashed their new powers. I feel like we haven't even mentioned that it's Pride Month all month.
I can't remember anymore. It's unspoken that it's Pride Month, I think, because we're talking about Amateur, Survivor, and Legend of Korra. Like, that's just implied. But, you know, we're not alone. Don't worry, if she pukes on you, it just means she likes you. It's Maddie Smith.
Thank you for reading my required intro.
Yes.
Your credits.
My trigger warning and my credits all combined in the one.
Yes, this is a new writer. Yes, happy Pride.
Go Pride.
Go Pride.
Maddie, how has Pride Month been treating you?
Pride Month has been good. My partner, Aaron, and I decided that this was going to be, like, the month where we really go all in with Pride and, like, try to actually go to stuff. And we went to one Pride event so far. We went to this, like, lesbian dyke throwing. I was going to say dyke axe throwing, and then I was like, Don't say that. But we went to a lesbian axe throwing night.
I love that.
And
that's so funny that you say that, because I some lesbian friends of mine got engaged recently, and they had a picture of themselves at an axe throwing sort of place. So apparently this is a thing.
It's unfortunately, two times makes it a stereotype.
It does.
So that is now, but it's not. It's a lot harder than you.
It's
think.
Really hard.
Like. Damn. The level, and it was one of those things where they had instructors, like, I think they had to have instructors, like, around you, because you're, like, holding axes and, like, throwing them, obviously.
That's fair.
But it was, like, it gave me flashbacks to, like, gym class, because, like, I was so bad at it, and, like, the instructor was, like, I'm gonna work with you until, like, you get good at this, and I was, like, please leave me, I don't want to be good at this. Like, and he was like, try it again. Like, try aiming higher. And I was like, I'm just not going to get it. But it was
I love
fun.
All of these novelty bars where they have these big games that nobody is good at in their first hour that you can pay for by the hour. Like, I just went shuffleboarding at Royal Palms and wherever that is.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, I paid for an hour of this and I'm not just going to be good at it after 50 minutes.
No, it's like skills you have to, like, work on. And they're like, oh, sorry, I guess you're bad at shuffleboarding, because what are you gonna do, come back and, like, pay for another hour? Fool.
Yes, we gotta.
It's a classic, you know, pyramid scheme, an MLM, as they say, you know. Happy Pride to all. Yeah. MLMs out there.
Yes.
Which, I mean, that's, you know, speaking of multi-level marketing, I feel like I understand where these, you know, just to jump right into chapter 2 of book 3, which is what we're talking about.
True.
I feel like it's very understandable that these airbenders, these newfound airbenders are very, you know, trepidatious to join a group of strangers, right?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't help that they had some of the worst marketing, multi-level or non, or singular level, available. They pretty much led with all of the weaknesses and tried to harangue people in. Look, I've fallen for many scams before, and I've always said that I would be one of the easiest person to get into a cult. And this is not how you start things off. You really have to go slow, get on their side, and like list all of the positives, not start with like, you'll be able to be bald.
Yes.
Yeah, it was surprising that they also like put out their two like weakest in charisma players. Tenzin and Korra. I feel like they should have led with Bolin. That would have been my vote.
Absolutely. Bolin and Asami, let them handle it. They seem like they're the idea people.
I was like, you have these like the two most charming people in the world, and you're leading with two absolute stone cold boxes.
Especially like their choice to leave Pema and Kaya at home. I'm like, these are the people who should be leading the initiative.
Absolutely. Like Kaya for sure like runs a few cults, has been in a few, has like taken down a few. Like, why not let her take the lead? I don't get it.
And of course, these people that we're listing as number one, number two on the call sheet are non-airbenders, and I understand that, but the people they're recruiting don't have to know that right off the bat.
And Pema has the sort of, she can draw from the, I gave birth to airbenders, love it. Like, I feel like she would be a great saleswoman for this sort of group that they're forming.
Mm-hmm. They need, like, it's like they need a, it's like, they need a Charles Xavier or something. They need someone who can go around and recruit these gifted youngsters by reading their minds and the minds of everyone that they love.
Manipulating
like,
them.
Yeah, essentially to be like, oh, I know exactly what to say because I know everything about you.
And just because Tenzin's bald doesn't mean that he is Charles Xavier.
Not at all.
A common misconception that Sam is now clearing up once and for all.
Now we said it.
I'm glad to get on the record about this.
Well, I don't know, not to skip ahead too much, because Maddie, we before the call, we were talking about how you were not a big fan of early Korra, as I think most people, but like, were you similar to Sam and I's journey? Were you turned around by book three? Like, what was your book three journey specifically?
So book three for sure is when like the deal was sealed for me. Like I think especially these first, I think that honestly the intro of the Red Lotus for me was like such a turning point for Legend of Korra. And it was finally them being like, okay, this is like the adult version of Avatar or the teen version of Avatar that we're gonna be. Like we are gonna like, this is, like, it felt like that was almost, like, the tonal shift that we needed that, like, was, like, okay, this show deserves to exist in its own right, and it's, like, different from Avatar, and it's building on it, but it has, like, the potential to be not as good, but really, really good.
it's getting, yes, it's definitely getting there, and, yeah, I think, what better way to kick off Pride than literally this, like, polycule that we're seeing, this evil polycule.
Yes.
Forming here. You know, we saw Zaheer last week, and I'm glad, as someone who has begrudgingly like watched a few Marvel television shows, that those shows love to just like really like not do a lot in each episode and like to like drip. It's like a slow drip, whereas this one we're like, okay, Zaheer, and now literally the whole gang is together by the end of the second episode of the season. Like, we are not fucking around here, folks.
I loved this. I felt like one of my major critiques of the first two books is that I didn't care about the villains and didn't really think that they were anything special, especially compared to a charismatic leader like Ozai. It's just like, but like these people in their intro, like all of them have had such like slay introductions so far. Like just like each one of them is doing something new that we've never seen. Like Minghua, like obviously she's not doing like new waterbending or anything, but she's like so like distinct. She doesn't have any arms. She's like waterbending Spider-Man everywhere, like got the ice hooks going on. Like,
yeah,
she's awesome. And just like the lava rocks is crazy. And then to see Zaheer be an airbender right off the bat, I feel like all three of the four, we didn't see the final one, I don't think.
Yet. Oh, yes.
But all three so far have been just like so stellar, such stellar introductions. And they're all kind of the same. Like, we don't really know anything about any of these characters yet, but it's just like they're all very, very cool. Whereas it was just kind of like, I don't care about Amon and I don't care about Bad Uncle.
We know Zaheer has a girlfriend, which makes him really cool.
It does. Yes. I not to like spoil anything because we're trying to be very holistic in our new approach, but you know. I feel like if we're 3 for 4 so far, I feel like it's safe to say the fourth one will be an equal slay. Just to tease.
Definitely. I mean, if Zuko is worried about her, I mean, that's probably bad.
I know Zuko's greatest weakness is getting slayed too hard.
Yes, he gets girl bossed to death, almost to the brink of death multiple times in the original series. Really, so we understand.
It's most gorgeous firebending woman. Sorry, Sam.
No, it's just that the biggest weakness to a firebender is a slaybender. He's worried that she's being unleashed.
Quote that on my grave, please. quote tweet that on my grave.
I was kind of surprised to see Zuko here in that I'm shocked we haven't seen him earlier. Like, they weren't even guaranteed a book 2. I'm surprised we didn't see all of the original gang members in book 1. And they really held Zuko back for such a long time. And we don't even see him until now. And it's like, it just seems like such a random scene kind of to be placing him. And it felt like it should be a big deal. But and then when it happened, I was just kind of like, oh, like Zuko's here.
Yeah.
No,
I was just going to say, I feel like the fact that we've already heard Zuko in the show, just like not the character, like I feel like also sort of makes it a little more complicated because like spiritually Zuko already kind of appeared, but it's like, it's an odd placement, but I will say I like that they were at least willing to like hold off on this sort of I don't want to use a gross word other than like load, like that's like the only word. I'm glad they could edge us a little longer.
I love my load getting edged just till the bitter end. I definitely think it would have been interesting to hear those kind of like development meetings happening, like because it did kind of feel like they were like, all right, we have played, you know, it's season 3, like we've played these nostalgia cards, like we need another big one. And then they're kind of like, oh, it's like the natural choice just Zuko, and like let's find a way to like fit him into the story. Or how like kind of that like element, like how they choose like which characters to reintroduce and like when. But I agree that I think that it took like a bit of integrity to not just like front load everything and to like, you know, go full like Star Wars with it.
Absolutely.
Especially when I feel like, so I felt like there was so much fan service or just like randomly like, hey, remember when this happened in the first series or whatever? And I mean, like Derek said, they did kind of still do that with giving Dante Bosco a job, but it was just, it was very strange to see him. I'm thrilled about it. He's got a dragon. He's really old. He looks super cool. Like, I'm obsessed.
Clearly like a late life gay, like that's just his vibe.
Yes. I will say something really embarrassing about the first time I watched this that I remembered is that I like did not get that was Zuko for like that, because I was like, I get that he has the scar and they call him by his name, but I was like, Dante Bosco is not voicing this man. I was fully expecting if they were going to bring Zuko in, that it would be Dante Bosco doing like an old voice.
Yeah.
And so it is unfortunately hashtag not my Zuko, but
And I really feel like it could have still been him. Like it, just because Dante Bosco has played. What Iroh 2 was that? General Iroh. Like they could have just had him back. Is it Grey Delisle playing Ming Hwa? I didn't look it up. Okay,
it
yeah, because it's like
and we didn't.
Go ahead. If Grey Delisle is going to come back, it's like, let's just get the gang back together. And is Absolutely. It because like, and this wouldn't actually make sense, but it's, I felt like, is the young Kai Airbender, is that the Aang's voice actor? His voice would have changed by then. It wouldn't be him. But I felt like I was just getting Aang.
It's giving
it
Aang.
Was giving Aang, yeah.
It was giving Aang.
I mean, we didn't even really talk about the fact that Henry Rollins is the voice of Zaheer. Like, that was like a pretty big get for them. So that's lots of iconic voice acting.
And who is that?
I feel like you would recognize him, but he was the lead singer of Black Flag and like a lot of other like projects. But he's like a very famous Gen X sort of like punk rock icon, I would say. So he is a big get. And I think plays it here perfectly.
I love that he also on his Wikipedia page, which I was gonna play off. Like I was like, oh yeah, Henry Rollins, rock and roll, my dude. I love Gen X culture. it says he campaigned for LGBT rights.
He was a guest judge on an early season of Drag Race, so.
He was?
Yes. Look it up. What's wrong with you, Sam?
A lot, apparently.
I love Henry Rollins. He's kind of a cutie with his long hair. Sexy.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying what I'm seeing. Maybe I'll have to look into these Black Flag music videos. Right?
But yes.
He's really bent over on the ground, belting into that mic. Henry Rollins explains the racist origins of marijuana prohibition. Okay, like it seems like he might be a king. Okay.
Wow. Okay. I love
you're that. Both like tucking your hair behind your ears now. Yeah, like,
Henry.
I love that.
yeah, okay. I'm glad then that I brought this up because you know clearly it's playing well to the crowd where Henry Rollins stands out.
How's it? You know, just got hot.
Wait a minute. You're like,
even hotter.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm not just talking about his. No, wait, I won't say it.
His lava bending best friend.
You're right. His lava bending best friend.
Exactly.
I will say Kazan, who is the lava bender, was extremely chill about Zaheer being able to airbend. He was just like, how'd you get airbending? And he's like,
yeah,
harmonic convergence. And he was like, great.
And then they make out. Like, I don't think he cares. That's like a subline to the, like what he cares about. Who cares?
He's like, we got a new trick. They also seemed very, like, I will say that it was like, you've been in prison for 13 years. Mm-hmm. You have been in a tiny box. Like all of them have been in tiny boxes for 13 years. I was
Sounds
surprised.
Like my dream.
Order me that for dessert, please. Pervert. Sam's a perv for tiny boxes. Happy Pride, except for Sam's fetish.
No tiny
at Pride.
No tiny boxes at Pride. If I see that at the parade, I'm gonna freak out. Me and my child. if my child learns about boxes at Pride, I swear to God. But I was surprised that they didn't, like, they were all absolutely kicking ass right out the door. Like, Zaheer has never airbended in his life before. He clearly was, like, probably trained in martial arts, obviously, so he knows that. But insane how they all just immediately, like, they didn't need that, like, move your big toe from Kill Bill moment, you know? They were just, like, fuck yeah, we've been training in our sleep. Let's go.
The White Lotus are a bunch of flops. When Iroh was in charge, when Pacu was in charge, these people would never have been allowed in the organization. And now in the modern day, they've completely gone to shit. As soon as they started just being an open to the world organization, suddenly anyone can join. And all these people who are supposed to be guarding the biggest criminals on the face of the planet are being taken out in less than a second by a guy on a boat.
Yeah,
it's It's the pussification of the white
lotus. Sissification. They've been sissified, the white lotus.
They sissified the white lotus.
Yes, the white lotus guards just give you the fluoride stare when you look at them.
The virgin white lotus versus the Chad red lotus.
And that has to exist somewhere. Well, clearly, like, from what we know, white lotus are just, like, basically, like, glorified cops at this point, and the red lotus are like these slayful queer icons. So I know who I'm rooting for, honestly.
Definitely. Yeah. Moving on from the red lotus, I feel like we've covered Zaheer and his gal pals' big road trip around the world. They are booking it around the world, by the way. I'm not going to track everybody's travel times like I was on book two, but you know, they are moving around quite swiftly. But let's talk about Team Avatar. I'm really enjoying this. I am so glad that we're getting out and about outside of Republic City. And like, because like all we've seen in the entire world so far really is the South Pole and Republic City. And now that like it's a team traveling around the world again, like it feels very old Avatar. And like, I really want to see what all of these cities and like all of the places around the world that we knew in the old show, like what is going on 70 years later. And that's what I feel like we're finally going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was very cool to see Bossing. I agree, it was really cool seeing how like naturally the world has evolved.
I agree, especially like Republic City is nice, but it's like clearly with book two they decided that they weren't gonna just like stay in Republic City, so like I am glad we're seeing the Earth Kingdom, because I think we both agree that book two is like the best Avatar season. I think a big part of that is because the Earth Kingdom is so huge and has like so many options. I mean, the fact that most of book one even takes place in the Earth Kingdom as well, like tells you right there, there's like a lot more diversity in the setting and stuff. So I think expanding beyond even just the South Pole and stuff like that is like already makes the world feel a lot bigger. We get to see like how the rest of the world is doing. Clearly it's like not like Republic City is obviously like a metropolis, very urbanized, but like there's still like farms and stuff, like it still feels very like a continuation of what we remember from the original series. So yes, I agree, Sam. I'm glad that we're going to hopefully see a lot more of the Earth Kingdom during this season.
And we start off right off the the first shot of the episode, I was like, I got issues with this. It starts off with people on Air Temple Island pulling the gigantic airship into the dock. It's like the airship is either going to come or not. Like these two people with rope are not going to be like pulling it towards the ground. Mm-hmm.
They had to be like, this is like a real world equivalent of a ship. So exactly. We have to show them that, we have to give them that context clue.
Yes. We love a docking scene. Always.
No boxes. So Asami's like, if we're gonna go around the world, we better do it in style. And she shows up with this airship. I think it's a great update to an Air Bison to just have a gigantic mechanical ship. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of getting this whole first couple scenes are sort of setting the stage for what the next couple episodes or maybe the full season are gonna be, where they're like, we're staying here, you guys are going, and Mako's like, I'm not gonna go, and then Bolin's like, you better go, and Mako's like, I'll go.
We have our grumpy boy Mako.
Yeah.
We have our brooding king Mako this episode.
Back to his roots, really, honestly. He's like done with the cop thing, hopefully. Although I don't know, he's very much, you know, exerting his authority over Kai in that final scene where he's like threatening Kai to, I don't even know, what the fuck is he gonna do to, he's gonna beat up an 11-year-old? Is that what he's gonna do?
He's just keeping watch.
Mako was pretty tough on crime and criminals like this whole episode. Like, I did even feel like when he was answering that call in like one of the first scenes, like he went and knocked on that closet really aggressively. When it's like you were called here, like relax.
And bring it down enough.
Open the closet and open it or I'm gonna blast it open. And it's like, this is a good example of why we need to teach the police like how to like communicate,
de-escalate.
Like, this is why we need to send social workers to things like this. If a social worker instead of Mako, no offense, was sent to deal with that, I don't know if we would have nearly the level of conflict that we are having right now.
I don't think so. No fireballs would be flung. Like Mako just needs to relax.
That's exactly what I was about to say. I really don't think firebenders should be police officers.
Oh. Okay, now hold on. I don't. Let's not play into this cultural anti-firebender stuff that's going on, Sam.
I guess to expand further, I don't think there should be police officers.
But well, yeah, that's fair.
Start defunding. Like, I know which element to start with.
That's totally, I get that. But specifically Mako, I'm sure there are much more capable firebenders who are not assholes.
Are you saying they are good apples?
I'm just saying Mako's a really bad apple. Like,
I think that Mako could have tried like one time to like talk to the guy. Like, he could have asked one question.
Not at all.
He was
Yeah, he's just, well, clearly he doesn't know how to make decisions. He's cheated on both of his girlfriends, like, at the same time. Like, he's just, like, doesn't understand how to interact with people. And, you know, maybe that's his journey this season, is he will learn how to be a functioning part of society.
Yeah. He's so hot-headed and so masculine. So
he is. And he's, like, it seems like he's very depressed now that his XGFs are besties. And at one point, Mako's like, I feel like I've started falling away from everybody. But in his reaction to that is to not go on this big road trip. And it's like, I can relate to that. Like, just if you feel isolated, so you isolate yourself. Relatable.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Poor Mako.
Now that I remember it, now that you say that, I've done that too, Sam. I've done that.
Mako's in his sad boy era. That's okay. He's, you know, fortunately Bolin is there to lighten the mood, and also, like we were talking about before, clearly is the MVP of like getting attention and drawing people in, unlike poor Tenzin, who, like we were saying before, is like, I'm going to take you away from your family, or I'm going to force you to wear old ass clothes and make you really boring, me. Like, that's just not appealing.
They honestly should have given him some like Sallie Mae training beforehand. Mm. Like, we were knocking on the MLMs before, but I really think that if Tenzin had approached this with the knowledge of like the best MLM salesperson, like, I think that he would have been like, you get to be your own boss. You get this really, if you like do this number of airbending skills, like, you get your own pink bison.
Ooh, that's pretty, that would get me pretty quickly.
I would love to be the marketing manager for Team Avatar.
Absolutely. It seemed
like by the end he kind of had parts of it figured out. Like, he revealed his rippling abs and his huge muscles at the end, so like that'll get your attention. Oh.
Hello.
It's like, Tenzin, all you needed was inside you all along. It's your muscles. They've been inside you all this time.
That sex appeal, baby. Mm-hmm. Get people wet and wild and ready to, you know, just slide on into that airship. Hello.
Yeah.
But I agree with Tenzin. Like, who wouldn't want a bison as a... I agree. That was a good... That should have been the first pitch. I would go in for, like, a bison best friend.
Absolutely. And... there are so many good ways to sell airbending. It's like, you will be famous in the world because you're one of the first you're gonna be an airbender either way, but you could easily rocket to being one of the most powerful benders in your entire field. Like, there's only six of us. You could easily be number two.
Would you all have, like, okay, let's say that you have the exact lives that you have right now, and you get a knock on your, you suddenly can airbend. You get a knock on your door. They're like, you have to move to the South Pole. And like,
if I can get really good at airbending, and it's like, if it's like a year, I could commit to a year of, like, you know, just get really good at it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I see where the farmer is coming from. I'm kind of like, but I could just keep living my normal life and be an okay airbender. And it's like, really, how frequently am I going to need to be a master airbender when being an okay airbender wouldn't suffice?
Right.
Yeah, I don't think, I think I'd be like, I'm a very non-confrontational person just to start off with. I really don't see myself getting into these levels of fights. I think it is like, it's like this weird thing where it's like, how crazy of an ask is this like in the universe? Like, I don't know. I think, cause I don't know. I feel like it is like a huge ask. And I do like that they acknowledge that people wouldn't, that not everyone is like this gung ho about, like, that there's people outside of Team Avatar that are like, that aren't as gung ho about this mission.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like especially for people who were non-benders, I mean, all of these airbenders seemingly so far have been people who were non-benders. And it's like this rich woman who Tenzin is saying, you'll be able to wear old clothing. It's like she's made her peace with not having bending abilities and clearly has a life all set up for herself. Like, she, it's not like she wants to go and be a monk. She doesn't want to eat vegetarian. She doesn't want to not have any worldly possessions. She wants to look good and like go about her day-to-day life.
They should completely rebrand the air. They should destroy what's left of the culture and completely
clean slate.
Rebrand. Yeah, they're like, oh, airbenders? You thought they were like monks that lived in like mountains completely isolated from everyone? No. It's party.
They're big old sluts. Yes.
Yeah. Haven't you heard the airbenders are the sluttiest benders now?
This is your chance to rebrand. You can help us become the big sluts.
Yeah, if Tenzin went around with his shirt off being like, airbenders are sluts, do you want to be an airbender? Everyone would be like, they would, that ship would be sagging if they tried to navigate.
I do feel like this is a weakness in where how they like set up the crew of the ship. Like, I understand that Jinora is like the oldest and like the closest, like the most like a ideal air nomad that Tenzin wants to emulate, but she's a big old nerd and not like, she wouldn't be as likable as Iki and Milo. And I feel like Milo and Iki are very different from what everybody else is like. And I feel like you could really show that like there are different ways to be an airbender and you don't have to be a stuffy old guy with a book.
Exactly. You can be like a cool little girl who throws tea parties with Bison. Those are your two options. Or a snotty child.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's all sorts of like ways. You don't just have to be the Avatar. You can be an 8-year-old.
Exactly. It's like, I feel like, because I guess that both storylines, kind of like both the Red Lotus and Team Avatar, they were both basically like team building, like obviously Zaheer wasn't going around recruiting anyone, but it was like basically trying to assemble the team that like later we would have, you know, like kind of laying that foundation for later in the season, hypothetically. Mm. But but I guess like, so from that we can, as we've mentioned, look at like, how did Zaheer do it better than Team Avatar? And I think that we've nailed it. We've nailed that sexy coffin, and it was sex appeal at the end of the day. Like, I feel like the writers of Avatar couldn't have made it clearer. They were like, Zaheer's got this awesome sauce team of hotties. Yeah, they're all sleeping together. Yeah, they're all the hottest person you've ever seen. What's Avatar got? A bunch of kids.
Literal children. A sad cop. Yeah. I mean, Asami is like definitely carrying in the like visual appeal arena, but she can't, you know, hold it all up by herself. And like, we have the tools. I think we all agree, like, every member of Team Avatar pretty sexy, but they just need a little zhuzhing up.
Yeah, yes. There's just more sex appeal on the evil. There's just always, the villains are always going to be sexier. I don't think that there's a TV show that exists that has a sexier hero than the villain. It doesn't make sense to me. I would never even consider it. Don't even think about bringing up one example you thought of. and I've even seen a lot of Red Lotus symbols on people's Grindr profiles. Carries over into the gay community.
Really?
Is that what that means?
Yeah, I keep seeing red flowers on people's profiles, so I feel like people, they love After Book 3, and they know that that's the sexiest thing you can be.
That's so cool. What kind of bending do you do?
Oh my god. So stupid. Yeah, so yeah, they're like traveling around. They're struggling a little, but you know, they arrive to this village. They seem to get their shit together, and they get someone. It is another child, unfortunately. No, but you know, he seems cool. His name's Kai. Seems like we're getting a kind of a new main character. Is the vibe,
and really signaling to the queer community with that choice of name.
Yes.
This is a gay kid. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's like there's always I know what you're referring to, Sam. There's like some posts going around by like non-binary people have like very specific names. Kai is, I think, on the top of the list. Next we're gonna get Sock, you know.
I love that. Well, my non-binary partner's name is Air, so maybe I do get the joke.
There you go. We're on to something here, clearly.
So maybe I do get the joke.
I'm with you.
Edit that out. Edit that out, Sam. And just edit in this. Ha ha ha. I get it. I love that the only kid they get, like, I love rapscallions in media. Like, I watched so much Oliver. Like, I watched that movie over and over again because I was just, like, obsessed with child criminals.
You love an urchin.
I love an urchin. I love that, like, the cops are so invested in this kid.
Much money. He has like a huge sack of gold. He's like Aladdin, but like way more successful.
Yeah. I feel like this, yeah, like, and they were like, whatever he tells you is a lie. He's the biggest crime he's committed is being a liar.
He already told us, like, we were his best friends.
Yeah, I was like, the cops like hate this kid.
They've like interacted with him enough to know he's like a liar. Like, he will not tell you the truth ever. He says he's gonna meet you at the bar at 8 p.m. Yeah. It will be 11 at earliest, okay?
And he's gonna look completely different from his photos.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like, are you crying? No, he's just like mean. He's mean.
Yeah, they were like, we got beef with that kid over.
11-year-old child.
Yeah.
There were like five police officers who showed up and were like, we need him. We finally tracked him down.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I mean, that's perfect. And then they did like one of my favorite like physical things that people do in media which is like they each grabbed one of his shoulders and like picked him up off the ground and were like walking away with him like with his shoulders up like dangling in between two officers.
Any criminal.
Yeah, they're like, we've got you now, you sicko. Like, it, the way that they reacted was as if Hannibal Lecter was on the loose in Bossing Say.
They got him. We got him.
Yeah.
And then Cora is like, you can release him to us. And the police officer's like, okay. It's like, yeah. Yeah, right. We don't need him anymore.
Yeah. They like the thrill of the chase, you know?
Yeah. They just wanted to prove to themselves that they could do it.
They're like, we're letting you go, Kai. Like, you didn't reject us. We're rejecting you from our jail.
Okay. And also, just remember this, if you still want to be friends, remember that we let you go.
Yeah, exactly. Like, y'all are in a toxic relationship with Kai.
With a child.
With a child. But
and then here's my issue. Like, they're ready to recruit him. He's like about to join the party, and Tenzin is like, "We can't. This guy sucks. Like, I hate this kid." And it just feels like Tenzin has been working again. I don't know if Tenzin actually wants this to work. Like, I feel like ever since the beginning of the episode, he's been like, "Oh damn, it's like really time for us to go around and recruit these people." Feels like everything he's done since the start of the episode has been like self-sabotaging. Like, both in like with the farmer, it's like, Tenzin, this guy is you, just without a bend. Like, he has it, he has to be dedicated to the farm, he's got a bunch of kids, he has a wife that he has to like take care of, and he like can't even meet him on this level of like relating to him at all. And now at the end, when they've got a kid ready to go, they're like, he's gonna learn airbending, he's like ready, he's excited, and Tenzin's like, no freaking way.
That's so crazy. That's so true. They really serve like the opportunity that for empathy up to Tenzin on like a golden platter, and he like slapped it across the room. He was like, I am not gonna relate to anyone on a personal level.
Yeah, that's really, yeah, there's a lot to unpack here with Tenzin. I mean, this is a man who left Lin Beifong for another woman. He clearly has a contentious relationship with Cora, refuses to meet her on her own level. I think we're onto something here. There's something deeper here, Tenzin. Let's explore this a little. You know, what's with the constant inner saboteur coming out? Do you want to have a successful relationship, Tenzin? Let's figure it out.
Oh my God, he's self-sabotaging.
He got the egg.
I do feel like this problem is not Tenzin's alone. I feel like they were trying to draw a parallel with the man Cora tried to recruit as well. Like, he seemed like he had a lot of similarities to Cora to me, and like, just she was trying to be too forceful when she could have been like, hey, I've been trapped at home living with my parents. Like, I've been directionless and not known exactly what I was supposed to do, even though I like have been called to this greater purpose. And look, it's better when the universe gives you a purpose, just check it out. See what happens for the next 3 months. You'll see.
And you can, you know, it's only a few simple payments. You know, just got to pay for that uniform and you'll be good.
Wow. That's so true. That's a really astute observation.
It sounds like you're being sarcastic. No,
I'm being bullied.
Wow, great read, Sam.
I can only deliver compliments sarcastically. Sam, that's like a really cool thing you noticed about the writing of the show. I really do mean that.
I'm sorry. I appreciate that.
Yes, I agree 100%. Yes. But you know, they got to figure it out in the end. I think this is kind of a cute sort of, I don't know, it feels like a little bit of a callback to the Tenzin Cora relationship of like, they just have always, both of them have always struggled like meeting people where they're at, and like, I don't know, like they're starting to learn hopefully that they can't just approach this like everyone's gonna be just like, you to use your word, Maddie, gung-ho, that not everyone's gonna be there yet. But there's, I don't know, a little glimmer of hope. There's clearly out there, there are little street urchins, little pickpockets ready to be snatched up off the street and forced into a life of monkhood.
Yeah, like they both had so much like so many narratives kind of like thrust upon them, because it's like Tenzin is like had this like life that he's expected to live, and Cora's had this like life like that she's expected to live, and I feel like it's kind of like coming out, the impact that that's had on like their own self-reflection and like, and how that affects their relationships, because it is almost like they can't imagine having these faults but not also having this call or this like responsibility, which I think is kind of like an interesting way of showing that.
That's pretty much what I was gonna say too. Like, they both feel this huge responsibility and like destiny just based in who they are, Cora being the avatar and Tenzin for several years at least being the only airbender on the planet. And like, but like, they've never been given a choice about what to do with their powers. Like, Cora is going to be the avatar no matter what. And up until 3 weeks ago during this episode, like, Tenzin was still the only airbender, technically, like, or airbending master, whatever. And so, like, there really is no choice. Like, Tenzin has to do what he's been doing for his entire life. And Korra, like, she is a bridge. Like, she has spiritual things that are going to happen to her no matter where she is, no matter what she's doing. And then, so they, like, can't really relate to these people who feel like, this isn't my problem. It's just something that's been forced on me. And, like, I love that these people are given these sympathetic, like, they're not, like, evil people. They're just normal people who don't want to be swept up in the wind, in the air of, like, this force of destiny and, like, the universe and the planets, like, changing their whole lives around.
It really feels like almost like the characters are who Tenzin and Korra would be if they did not have this, like, destiny, or, like, if Korra had not been born as the Avatar. And it's almost like, it almost feels like an interesting narrative technique of being like, here's how they really feel about themselves, or here's what how they really feel about kind of, like, their own, like who they truly are without this, without kind of, like, having it be, like, you know, like, look, I don't know, like being super introspective, which is hard to show.
Right.
Yeah. So we see them react to them. Like, we see the characters that they are trying to recruit are them. And so we see them reacting to their strategies for recruitment. And, like, we see the weaknesses and, like, what they are saying and, like, how it would not even work on them if they were, like, a part of the new airbending community.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's, like, a way more interesting way to, like, talk about Korra, like, who is Korra without being the Avatar, than, like, literally physically taking her bending away or ripping a slug out of her body. Like, this is, like, a lot more interesting than that. And so this is, you know, why this book is already working for me on levels that the first two were not.
Because I feel like so much of Avatar, both shows, like, really do explore, like, you know, how people react to, like, you know, like, there's, like, the hero because, like, it's almost like it's been thrust upon them, you know, like, there's the Avatar where it's like it's almost as if the choice was made for them, but then you see so many people where it's like, if you don't have that narrative, or, like, if you don't have that, you know, decision kind of forced on you in your life, like, what will you do, what will you choose? And I just feel like that's a really cool theme that they explore so much throughout both shows, but it was kind of interesting seeing it here in this way.
Agreed.
A bit especially to compare these people to Zaheer, who has pretty much and Bumi, I guess, but Bumi's had a lifetime of, like, preparing him to be an air nomad, but, like, Zaheer just, like, completely takes it in stride and uses it to, like, continue enacting evil plans and just, like, instantly adapts to be having these abilities, where, and I mean, but he's still a criminal, so I guess he's, like,
and like seeing all it as, like, a sign. Yeah,
I feel like he's, like, he's, like, the farmer, honestly. He's like, well, I'm still going to be a criminal, even though I have these airbending powers. And the farmer's like, I'm still going to be a farmer. Like, I have to feed my family and seemingly, like, a town of people if I'm a farmer. I don't really know the spread of this man's farming prowess. But, like, these people are just, like, now that they have airbending, they're going to keep being who they were, just with airbending.
I think it's interesting how I think both Zaheer and Kai, like, do mention seeing airbending as a sign for, like, a greater purpose. And seeing, obviously, Zaheer it confirming this life of, you know, what we see is, like, a life of, you know, his purpose is, and the show is evil and chaos and destruction. But for Kai, he sees it as a sign for, you know, like, being good and, like, finding meaning in his life. And I feel like it's interesting that they called out both of them, like, specifically being like, okay, I see this as, like, a chance to go in a certain direction and to, like, take a certain action.
That is really interesting, especially because Kai was a criminal before he was an airbender. And now that I guess we'll see if, like, he really has changed who he was, or if he's just, like, talking out of his ass in order to just not be put in jail. But, like, both of these, maybe if Kai got this power later in life, he would be such a down the evil path that Zaheer was down, that he would have the same experience as Zaheer, but now that he's been given this power so early in life, he's like maybe taking it as a sign to be a good person.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and Mako, of course, is not about that redemption life. He's like, I got my eye on you. I know you're a bad person.
I don't. This is not what Mako was saying at all.
Absolutely, it is.
He was like, I've been in your shoes. I've stolen stuff also. I understand growing up as a little, what's the word, urchin. And you're not going to be getting away with that kind of stuff with me. Like, it's not like, fuck you, little kid.
Yeah.
That's what I heard. I saw his eyes turn red and he kicked Kai in the face.
He was like, I know your tricks because guess what? I invented the tricks. You can't pull anything off with me. It's like, I was gonna reference that Jesse Eisenberg magician movie, but then I realized that I was gonna spoil that movie.
Oh yes, you wouldn't want to do that.
I guess so much of a theme of this episode is like choice and like what we choose to do with the power that we're given. To quote the hottest guy on earth, Spider-Man's Uncle Ben, with great power. Like the whole like with great power comes sick abs.
Yes, I remember when he said
that. And what are we gonna do with whatever you decide to do with your hot body is up to you. But you have to do something. So what's it gonna be?
Sis. that's the quote. The full quote.
Yeah. It always gets me, just thinking about that makes me almost cry. That old man saying that.
Uncle Ben is one of the dolls. Okay. Does anybody have any final thoughts on the episode? I feel like we've delved pretty deep here. Oh, last thing, we completely forgot. Jinora, implied crush on Kai. Jinora saw Kai. She goes, the hearts came out of her eyes.
Hubba, hubba.
And she's ready to pounce.
Oh, yes, Jinora,
It's the good girl, bad boy dichotomy. You can only be one.
It's true. That's what Leighton Meester was singing about in the song, right? Good girls go bad.
Make your good girls go bad.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's what Kai
they get on the Cobra starship and they head off into the Earth Kingdom.
That's what Kai whispered to Mako that like pissed him off.
The Cobra starship lyrics.
Like, guess what, Mako? I'm gonna make your good girls go bad. So what are you gonna do about it?
Mako's like, Kai, Asami, Korra, and Jinora team up. Could be good.
It's happening. Mm-hmm. but that's all I have to say.
That's pretty much it. That's pretty much all there is to say.
That's that on that. Maddie, do you want to remind the good people where they can find you?
I guess I'll say my socials. I have nothing going on in my life right now. You can find me at Maddie0619 on Instagram. And honestly, the big thing I'm promoting right now is that my partner Aaron and I are revamping our TikTok that we want people to follow. Ooh. It's at Team Jakeward. It is our homoerotic Twilight Barbie doll TikTok account. That features Jacob Black and Edward Cullen Barbie doll. Something for the fans. We got the whole Cullen family now in Barbie dolls. It costs so much money, but we really think the content's gonna be worth it.
Have you ever seen those TikToks of I don't even know what they're called, but all those animal figurines who they like post
That's
like drama videos of? Okay, great.
That's our if I was a painter, I would say that they're Van Gogh.
Sylvanian drama or something like Sylvanian that. Sylvanian drama. It's
So basically what I want to say is please follow Sylvanian drama on TikTok. And if you want to see a rip off of that, please follow Team Jakeward on TikTok. we really think this is gonna take us to the big times.
I see it for you.
Lovely.
Yeah, we're gonna get that call from Mr. TikTok. He's gonna be like, you're on. You're on TikTok.
You're on here. That's I want that for you too. I'm manifest that.
I appreciate
for you.
It.
I mean, yes. You made such amazing things with just the Jacob and Edward dolls, so I'm excited to see what comes next.
The universe is expanding.
We're definitely doing it's going to be either all gay couples, so it's going to be Emmett Jasper, Alice Rosalie. Ooh. But we will potentially, we have right now basically a narrative going that Jacob and Edward ran off together and Bella's been jealous. I don't even remember her name. And it's just one thing I want to say, I don't know if the Barbie listens to this, but every single Cullen doll is like meticulously like created to look just like the character, and they like do like customized face shapes, and they have like custom makeups so that they look just like the character, except for Bella, who is just a Barbie, like a brunette Barbie. Like they literally did nothing to her, and like
damn.
Alice has like this really specific makeup done. Rosalie is gorgeous and has like the specific makeup done. Like Emmett's clearly like a super new mold, and then Bella is like, they were like, well,
just some
we have
girl.
This one lying around.
Do you think they couldn't afford Kristen Stewart's likeness?
Who could?
That's the narrative I'm gonna go with.
Yeah, it's a pretty penny for her face to be shown.
She was like, hell no.
I'll collect the check, but I will not be having my face on a Barbie doll.
Anyway, yeah, long-winded way of saying, if you want the ride of your life, follow that. Sorry, I had to like pull up TikTok to like reference it because I couldn't remember. Anyway, that's it.
Team Jake word, period. I'm so
yes,
Team
I guess Jake I have word. A lot going on in my life.
You do. You have so much going on.
Don't sell yourself short.
Yeah.
Seven Barbies.
Exactly. Well, you can follow me at Ray Dierks on Twitter. You can follow my other podcast with our good friend Christine Palin at Shadow Play Gaze on Twitter. We're going to have some bonus episodes coming up in the summer, I'm sure. But, you know, Christine's also very busy with Stand Uatu. So,
oh yeah, I mean, Maddie, honestly, if you are looking for a different season of Survivor to watch, Survivor Vanuatu is one of the most sapphic seasons of the show, and highly recommend a very good
ninth season,
and the third of the Bitter Drurs pod triumvirate is doing a rewatch podcast spoiler free Vanuatu podcast all summer long. Derek and I will be on it eventually, and it's so good. Yes. Called Stanuatu on the Bitter Drurs network. Anyway, for me, you can follow me at Sims. You can follow me at Sims Danish on Instagram and Twitter. This podcast at Bitter Drurs Pod on Instagram and Twitter. We had quite the viral tweet the last couple days about a Survivor. Mm-hmm. And you can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, and I'll read it right here. This week we have TB_snowglobe, who says, Christina Cha, Rob, G.Otis, what's in it for Monica? Love the podcast. Short and sweet, 5 stars. Excellent. And if you leave us a review, we'll read it right here at the very end of the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, our faithful listener. And it's true, Christina Cha is robbed and a goddess.
True. Yeah, I think that about wraps us up, unless there's any last millisecond thoughts anybody wants to get off their chest.
No, I'm good. Yeah, I think we've really dug through anything we could. We've psychoanalyzed Tenzin. We've talked about Oliver. I think we did it all.
And what's his name, that band guy who we now love, whose voice is here. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thanks, Maddie. This was so great. Yes, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you both so much. It was such a joy.
Always, yes. I'm glad you could return. Return of the legend. But okay, well, we'll see you all next week for Book 3, Chapter 3. Bye, y'all.
Happy Pride.
Bye. Happy Pride.